Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what is this thing that you have constructed on your side of the desk?
I guess it's kind of a note holder.
Yeah.
And it's made out of some sort of box that I found. And it's got paper clips that apparently aren't doing anything, but it is serving a purpose.
Yeah, and a clothespin, apparently.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I don't know where you got a clothespin in the office, but...
Well, some of us like to save energy and do our laundry here and fly it out on the 15th floor balcony.
We get a lot of wind out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I engaged in a bit of... this is, of course, tool use that you're engaging in here.
Yes.
And I actually engaged in a little bit of this during our recent... great freeze that hit Atlanta.
Oh, Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon, as some people called it. And the situation was that we kept making hot tea because that was all we could basically, you know, it was just like, what are we going to do now? Let's make hot tea.
Right.
What are we going to do now? Let's play Scrabble and let's make hot tea. And that was like, you know, 4 days of being trapped inside doing that. And our tea ball was, like the chain was broken on it. So I ended up like constructing something where I took like the tea ball and then I used some butcher twine. Is it called butcher twine?
Yes.
Yes. And like I used that to attach it to like a metal skewer and created a system of being able to, of moving the tea ball in and out of the boiling kettle. So,
wow. So I have to ask you, did you make so much tea that you guys broke it and then you needed to resort to such tool using behavior?
Yes.
So you found out a little something about yourself during Snowmageddon.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did. And it's interesting as we get into this and we start talking about tool use in the animal kingdom, you do see that captivity will often bring out, the more innovative side of many animals. An animal that is not necessarily a tool user may become one in captivity. And one that, is capable of only say like a very low level tool use, is sometimes capable of higher level tool use, if they're locked in a zoo.
Okay. So boredom is the mother of invention is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also the mother of injury, but luckily, nothing went wrong with the tea ball invention that I came up with. So Let's talk about tool use then.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we normally think about tool use, in primates, right?
Right.
Jane Goodall, witnessing a single blade of grass being stuck down into a termite mound and, mm-hmm. and then a lovely snack emerging.
Yeah. Or just like, you know, 2001, A Space Odyssey, monkeys picking up bones.
Yeah.
Beating other monkeys on the head. Because weapons are ultimately tools.
Right, right. But I think that we don't necessarily look to other animals and think, oh, well, I bet that they're an extraordinary tool user.
Right.
But in fact, they are. And my favorite example is the octopus, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This one is really cool. Now, this is an octopus, as we all know, does not have a shell. There are various cephalopods that do, but the octopus depends on other methods of survival, camouflage,
right.
Shape changing, basically, and being able to sort of creep around and not draw a lot of attention to itself.
Yeah, but what do you do if you've got to cross the seafloor and there's nothing to camouflage yourself against, and I don't know, you've got another mile to go?
Well, you could evolve, you could slowly develop. Some sort of a protective coating through one dead octopus after another dead octopus until,
wow.
You end up, selecting that octopus that has a harder shell, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could. Or in the short term.
Yeah.
If you lived in Indonesia and you were an octopus and you saw a coconut on the bottom of the seafloor, you could take the two halves of it and you could crawl into it when you needed to
mm-hmm.
and reassemble it. And
oh,
no
wow.
one would be the wiser, right? They'd be like, oh, gosh, that's not prey. That's just a stupid coconut. And I love that. I love that the octopus is like, you know what? This is something that I can obscure myself in. Nobody's going to know. And now I can resume my journey.
Wow. That's really incredible. It's and it just goes to show that, I mean, all tool use really kind of clues us into something, to some serious cognition going on.
Yeah.
And octopi are pretty smart. It's one of the reasons me personally, I can't really eat them in sushi anymore. I just, I hear they're as smart as cats, from various things. And then I look at my cat and I'm like, I wouldn't eat my cat on a California roll.
Yeah. If I did eat seafood, I have to say just the look of them. I don't know. It seems like a frightening proposition to have that in my mouth. But what I think is so cool, too, about this coconut example is it totally reminded me of this invention. It's in Japan. And have you ever seen this? It's this fold-up Coke machine.
No.
Okay, well, it's...
But I do really want to do an episode about amazing vending machines sometime, so...
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
There's plenty of them. Listeners, I think you... Wink, wink. I think you might know what we're talking about here. But this... I love the idea of this, but it's super silly. I mean, it's flat-packed. It looks like a Coke machine when you unpack it. You zip mm-hmm. yourself in it, and then, lo and behold... You look like a plastic vending machine.
So what happens when people put money into you or reach into you for snacks?
Well, you have several choices in your response. But I was thinking, the octopus is actually much more clever than us humans in trying to camouflage themselves on the street, so to speak.
Well, that's awesome. It's we were researching about this, and a lot of tool use when it comes to, the brain comes down to something, that we call, body schema.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, this idea has been around for about 100 years, and it's the idea that our brains are just constantly processing visual tactile feedback about what our bodies are doing and how they're positioned. And you create these different sort of versions of ourselves, So like, I like to think of it in terms of like martial arts movies where like somebody goes into say like drunken monkey stance or tiger stance. But as tool users, we have as humans, we would have other stances like, oh my goodness, don't hit me in the face with that ball stance.
Right.
Or I'm going to chase the cat stance. Those different body positions that are aimed towards particular tasks.
Okay.
But when you throw in tools, then you get all these different additional positions. You get like grumpy snow shoveler stance or intense polenta stirrer stance, toothbrusher stance.
Don't forget risotto stance.
Risotto stance.
Yeah.
Is that the other one that involves a lot of stirring?
Yeah, lots.
Yeah. I just know I'll be asked to stir something and then I lose all memory of what I'm stirring. It takes so long.
Wow.
It's delicious when it's done, but it's just, it's quite an effort.
Right.
But anyway, so our brains are constantly working this out. And it's definitely an instance of these tools becoming an extension of our bodies.
Right.
They're a part of our body schema. They become part of who we are. You know, we're used to hearing about this ones, like you hear people talking about like swordsmanship or golf, you know, and you hear it's like, oh, well, you need to make the club an extension of your arm.
Right.
You need to make
be this, one with it.
Yeah. Be one with the sword or something, you know, and that's exactly what's going on. Like the more you're able to, the better you are at using a tool, the more the brain identifies it as a part of yourself.
Right, right. And actually, they were, I saw a study from the National Institute of Health on tool use tasks for toddlers. And they were talking about how toddlers, that were using tools to act on themselves, like feed themselves, for mm-hmm. instance, were picking up on that and using that a lot more than externally. In other words, like, you know, feeding Elmo, some quinoa or something. And so you see that idea of it being an extension of yourself right there in that example, and that we automatically say, oh, okay, I'm a little toddler brain and I'm trying to figure this out for myself and here's my spoon. But, you know, Elmo's not going to get his food until much later. But that brings me to this point, you know, we should probably talk exactly about what tool use is. I mean, you know, it seems pretty obvious, but it's really defined as providing no benefit until they're used for a very specific purpose. So with animals, what's really cool about that is that it shows that the animal is capable of pre-planning,
right.
advanced planning.
Yeah, it's not just an animal, say, picking up a stick and beating random things with it. There's no purpose to that. So
yeah.
That's not tool use. Now, something like that might develop into tool use in time, but yeah, there's got to be a purpose in mind.
That's right. We're seeing a lot of cogitation going on.
Mm-hmm.
Cogitation party.
And there are actually, I've read that there are basically two types of tools. There is first there's something called an artifact, right?
Mm-hmm.
An artifact is something that is crafted. For example, if a chimp, you know, we're used to seeing images of like a chimp sticking poking a stick down a termite hole,
right.
and coming up with termites to lick off. Well, chimps have been known to chew the termite fishing stick so that it fits better into the holes. So they're creating an artifact. Now, if they had not used their mouths to alter it, they would have what is sometimes called a nature fact, which is kind of like just a found object tool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here's a stick. I'll pick it up. I'll get some bugs on it and eat the bugs off the stick. But
right.
I haven't changed the stick. And then when it comes to these different artifacts, there are basically four levels. There is reduction, where you reduce the mass of a functional object.
Okay.
You take the stick, chew something off of it, now you can use it. Then there's conjunction, where you combine two or more units to make a tool. An example of this where it would be, you take, looking at early humans, like you take a stone, sharpen it into something,
mm-hmm.
and then you attach it to a stick to make a spear.
Okay.
Whammo, you have a conjunction tool. And then there, the third level, replication. This would be where it's conjunction, but with two or more similar units. So if you made a two-headed spear, you know, you have three different things going on there. And then there's linkage, and this is the more complicated form. And this is where you have physically distinct forms used in combination. And that would be like if you made a bow and you made an arrow. Bow mm-hmm. and arrow are both rather different, but together you have a single tool that's very useful to early hunters.
Okay. Actually, that was making me think about elephants. I know that in South Africa, it was observed that an elephant, after digging a hole and drinking water
mm-hmm.
and presumably spitting that water back in, stripped bark from a nearby tree and then chewed it into a large ball.
Uh-huh.
So transforming it, and then plugged the hole and covered it with sand. So essentially the elephant was making a canteen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then taking that ball out again and slurping it up again.
Huh.
So that's something that definitely, the elephant transformed its environment in order to create this kind of groovy canteen.
Oh, wow. And yeah, and that's an elephant using like a level two artifact.
Right.
I mentioned earlier about, you know, how captivity can change the level of tool use involved.
Mm-hmm.
We see that, with the capuchin monkeys. If you've watched Life, the awesome Discovery / BBC show. There's, you know, great scenes in that and various other documentaries that show these guys taking rocks and using them to bust open nuts so they can eat the insides.
And they're very selective about their rocks, right?
Yeah.
Like it's no rock will do.
Right. And it takes them a while to learn how to do it. Like there are also lots of cool, you know, generally you see lots of footage of the younger ones trying to do it and just failing miserably. Like, picking the wrong stones, you know, et cetera. But the cool thing is that, they've actually been seen to craft tools in captivity instead of just, cause the rock that they're beating the nut with is just, that's a nature fact. But in captivity, sometimes they make artifacts. They've been seen to sticking two pieces of straw together to make a longer probe, to reach things that are outside of the cage.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Again, you know, captivity, boredom. Invention.
Creative, mayhem, as in the case with, actually, again, with the octopi. I know there have been a couple of different instances in captivity that they've done some stuff, and one was at the Santa Monica Pier Aquarium. There was a female California two-spotted octopus who swam to the top of her tank, disassembled the valve with her arm, and then released 200 gallons of seawater into nearby exhibits and offices.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And then, I understand the same octopus stole somebody's wallet, made a Xerox of their driver's license.
Yes.
And was able to skip the entire state. Like, I think they're still living in Nevada.
Yes. Yeah. I heard that too. But actually you say that and it did make me think, like, what's going on in the octopi's mind there? I mean, do you think that they're swimming around going, you know what? I need to show all these other sea creatures who's the boss here.
Yeah.
And what sort of force I have and the power that I have in this aquarium. I'm going to flood this place.
Oh man, it's like rock stars trashing a hotel room.
Yeah, totally. And that's what I was like, these octopi are pretty great. There was another one, who actually disassembled a robot. There was there's this little robot puttering around the aquarium. I don't know why they put it in there, but piece by piece, it was disassembled.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I've seen some cool videos of polar bears, going, they have these like ice flow robots.
Yeah.
I posted on the Facebook a while back, but, they have like these little robots that are disguised as like chunks of ice and they either float or they sort of crawl around on the ice. But polar bears are, you know, there's not a lot to do. They're curious animals.
Right.
They'll see this and they end up just tearing it to pieces.
Of course. They're like, what is this?
Yeah.
I need to get
How
to the bottom of it.
How dare it come into my realm and think it's going to get away.
That's right. Yeah. I'll show you. Again, octopi, really smart creatures, obviously. And another really cool thing about them is that they use their suction cups like pincers, like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And they have so many neurons actually firing in their arms and sort of neuron power, I guess you could say, that they can take every single one of those suckers and make them pincers.
Whoa.
Which just really like blows our ability out of the water there. No pun intended. But a lot of this is because these guys have, like, their ganglia is all grouped together.
Uh-huh.
Whereas with the mollusk and nervous system in other creatures like clams, for instance, they're all over the place. They're widely dispersed.
Yeah, but you don't see clams using a lot of tools.
No, they don't. Sorry. They might have a lovely pearl, but that's about it.
That's about it.
But that's the cool thing about the octopi is that they do have this group of ganglia, so to speak, and that gives them the edge over other cephalods, I suppose.
Now, another interesting critter in the ocean that's been known to use tools is, of course, the dolphin.
Yeah.
Which comes as less a surprise because everybody's on the, you know, especially thanks to John C. Lilly.
I was about to say, like, do you mind, like, that, I have to say, like, this, again, to remind people who may or may not have heard the podcast that we did on the strange lives of scientists, John C. Lilly worked extensively with dolphins. And what we know is that dolphins can actually court other humans given the right circumstances.
Yeah. He's one of the, you really have to trace the whole dolphin mania and a lot of our cultural respect for dolphins, back to this guy, though he, definitely had made some very questionable choices in his research.
Right.
So today, the post-flipper era, it comes as no surprise that, yeah, dolphins can use tools.
Yeah, of course. They can court us. They can flash us, like, you know, the flashers of the oceans. But the tool that they use is really cool.
Yeah, sponges, right?
Yeah.
Which they use to stir the ocean bottom sand to uncover and disorient prey.
Yeah, and the really cool thing about this is that researchers have found that it's a hunting technique that originated in a single female and is passed from mother to daughter.
Huh.
Yeah, and what they did is they analyzed the mitochondrial DNA, which is the DNA passed down by females, and they found that the 13 spongers and 172 non-spongers, they found the trait appeared to be passed on mostly within a single family line and from mother to daughter, and that sponging most likely originated in a recent ancestor.
Huh.
So this is sort of a new thing for them. And they say, well, okay, why? What about the males? How come this isn't happening with them? And apparently, like, they hypothesized that male bottlenose dolphins tend to form close bonds with other males, and so those alliances aren't really suited to seabed foraging, since it's time-consuming and it's a solitary activity.
Huh.
I don't know. This seems kind of weak sauce to me in terms of a theory, but...
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the cheetahs that bring down ostriches in that's covered in one of the episodes of Life,
mm-hmm.
where... since it's only the males doing it, it's not getting passed on because the male cheetahs are not involved in rearing and raising of young.
Right. Okay.
You know? So yeah, it's interesting to think. It's like, it's one thing to develop, to develop tool use, but you've got to be able to pass it on. It's got to, you know, cause I guess conceivably you could have an animal out there that learns to use a tool, but is it using it? A, is it using it a lot? And B, is it taking that and passing it on to the next generation to where it becomes like standard practice?
Right. Monkey see, monkey do. Another example of being in captivity is I remember working at the zoo
mm-hmm.
And finding out that the orangutans there were trying to get out of the enclosure, of course, as they all try to, all the primates do.
Uh-huh.
And the first generation would just get electrocuted from the wire, right? And they did that, I don't know, maybe like five times. And they said, okay, I'm going to stop. The second generation, they actually taught them, like, the wire's hot, be careful. And so they started to try to build things to get over the fence.
Uh-huh.
And they were unsuccessful. And then the third generation, again, looked at all of this going on and realized that they could actually, like, short the wire by jumping on the, I guess, like a tree. I can't remember exactly what it was. And so they could then escape the enclosure that way. So there you go.
Yeah, there's a really interesting recent Radio Lab episode that dealt with with orangutans trying to escape their enclosure. And this one involved an orangutan that was apparently using a little piece of metal to pick a lock. So it's incredible what some of the higher primates can get up to. Other examples from the animal kingdom, you have gorillas that sometimes use walking sticks, and they'll use them to test the depth of water to keep their balance as they cross.
Yeah, which is really cool looking. If you haven't seen that before, if you go to YouTube, you can probably find it.
Especially when they take it and they shake it at the younger gorillas and tell them to get off their lawn. You have chimpanzees using clubs. There was another interesting recent case where a chimpanzee at a zoo was like stockpiling rocks
mm-hmm.
to throw because it was old and grumpy, apparently, to throw at zoo visitors.
Again, advanced planning, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to use it as a projectile, there's some thought that needs to go in there. Poor zoo goers.
and of course, we mentioned chimps foraging. And also macaques using rocks to bust open nuts. Some more interesting examples. This was one I had never heard of before, but naked mole rats crafting masks. And first of all, I love naked mole rats. Like, they're just an amazing animal. If you get to see some at a zoo, definitely see them because they're living in like a hive environment.
They're naked.
They're naked. They're funny looking. They walk backwards. They're just a complete win as far as animals go. But they have these powerful protruding teeth that they use to burrow, and their lips are on the inside, like behind their teeth and all.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really crazy looking. And since they're naked, they all have to sleep in big piles to, keep their body heat going on.
Not going to make a joke there.
Yeah.
But. Tea party.
But to keep their lungs clear, some of the scientists have observed the mole rats placing wood shavings behind their teeth in front of those lips
to
create a basically a simple mask. I mean, it doesn't look you know, when I say mole rats with masks, it may sound like they're creating like big tribal, you know, masks. But
right.
That's not really the case. But they're crudely using, you know, little wood shavings to help protect their face. So
yeah, I read about that. That is pretty cool.
And then with humans, of course, our tool use is just all over the place and has been like just an important part of our evolution. Like there are studies that have relate to dart throwing. Like all the like our wrists are really complicated.
Yeah.
And the dart throwing motion is that's an area that is getting a fair amount of study because the evolution of these amazing wrists we have
mm-hmm.
apparently has a lot to do with our ability to use tools.
So the dart throwing, is this like, did this come with the advent of pubs?
Yes, ancient caveman pubs.
Right.
Where they learned to brew a hard cider and then they started playing darts.
Right, you'd have to establish your prowess with the darts and therefore we have this nice complicated wrist to think. No, that's completely not true.
But hey, speaking of creatures developing things like pubs and hard cider, we have some listener mail. And it is, what I have here is some stuff related to our recent podcast on animal junkies, or junkies of the animal kingdom, which received a fair amount of feedback. We're not able to read everything, but the first one, this one I was really excited to get because it comes from Jana in Newfoundland, Canada. And where I spent part of my childhood, I mentioned this in the podcast when we were talking about mooses or moose.
Mooses? I think it's moose.
Moose?
Yeah.
Okay. She says, "Hello, I'm from rural Newfoundland, Canada. First of all, I'm glad to hear you lived here once. Plus, I would like to second what you said about the mooses here. We have hundreds of moose accidents a year here, and some of these often result in death, which is always sad and unnecessary. The moose come out to the highway to lick the salt on the road. That's put on the road to reduce ice. Many people here have started a group to get the government to allow more moose hunting license as they are extremely overpopulated and put up moose fences along the main highway to reduce accidents. Just thought this is another cool but sad junkie story."
So,
that's interesting. Yeah, because you have, it's twofold. You have the moose coming in to eat the salt and then becoming a pest to, becoming a pest to drivers, though I guess you could say the drivers are the pest.
Right.
And also where, you know, they're the ones that are responsible for the overpopulation. But anyway, it was great to hear from somebody in Newfoundland.
Your peeps.
Yeah. we also heard from a listener by the name of Craig, who grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he let us know that he used to live in a neighborhood called Bramblewood, so-called because of a very large blackberry bramble.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't able to pick all of the blackberries. So he said, says, "The berries we couldn't pick would ferment in the summer sun and seem to attract animals from all over. As the more rotten the fruit got, the more birds you would see sluggishly hopping around the ground or just collapsed in a heap on a branch. The rodents got in on the act as well, and it was quite a sight to see startled squirrels leaping for branches and missing. All this concentration of slow-moving prey eventually attracted snakes, and by the end of blackberry season, you could always find several snakes lying beneath the brambles with bulges in their bodies. It's hard to tell if a snake is drunk, but if you were going to ever get one to consume alcohol, I suppose this would have to have been the way." So that was...
I love that, because we obviously Atlanta's in the South, and we know those warm, crazy, hot summers, and I can just imagine all of these creatures laying around, you know, drunk on their blackberry brambles.
Yeah, it's eaten by snakes.
Yeah,
it's happened to friends of mine.
Yeah. I was gonna say it has like a very like Faulkner-esque ring to it in the animal kingdom.
And then on the, this is actually on our Facebook page. We had a listener by the name of Cynthia who was inspired by our mention of how catnip or the nip is sometimes or at least used to be used as a tea for humans. So she says, quote, "Thanks to the Animal Junkies podcast, I brewed some catnip tea and gave it to my kitties yesterday with some pretty excellent results. I will definitely be doing that again. Thanks for the idea. love the podcast, and so I had to get more details on that.
Yeah.
So I asked a few questions, and she provided these details. She says, well, I diluted the tea 2-to-1 because I didn't want to overdo it. So they didn't finish all of the diluted stuff. I saved the rest for next time. But I left the teacup with the dregs in it on the ground as well, and that was gone in a couple of seconds. Then there were just two cats rubbing their faces on the water bowl and around it.
Oh, you gotta love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, the listeners, don't try this at home. Kids, don't try this home, because I know that Cynthia is an expert tea brewer.
Yeah, yeah, don't. Yeah, this was an experiment carried off by our own free will. We did not prompt her to do this.
We didn't at all.
Yeah, yeah, we just don't want to be responsible for any, weird tea-related epidemics out there.
Marauding cats. Yeah. Gangs of marauding cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you have it. If you have anything to add about animal junkies, about animal tool users, or even like your own children learning to use tools, I find that fascinating as well. Then let us know. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as Blow the Mind, and we frequently update that with all sorts of cool links to How Stuff Works content, as well as content from elsewhere around the web.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.